If you are an Empire listener, hopefully you've played around on chain. And if you have done that, you know that transferring assets across different chains is a pain, to put it nicely. That is why we are incredibly excited to have the Wormhole Foundation as a partner of the Empire podcast, stewards of the Wormhole protocol, supporting over 30 different blockchains and 6 different runtimes. Stay tuned later in the show. We have a cool thing that you can claim, which is a Wormhole NFT just for Empire listeners. This episode is brought to you by Monad, which has not only the highest performance EVM L1 architecture ever built, but also the wildest and craziest community in crypto. Monad's internal devnet is live and public testnet comes out soon. So make sure you join the Monad community today at discord.gg/Monad, M-O-N-A-D, Monad. This episode is brought to you by Shardium, an EVM-based smart contract platform with state sharding and auto-scaling. Shardium is designed to achieve horizontal scaling to ensure sustainably low transaction fees for you, the end user. You'll learn more about Shardium and auto-scaling later in the show. This episode is brought to you by Supra, an Oracle provider across more than 50 different blockchains. If you are building anything in crypto, you likely need verifiable randomness and you need oracles. Well, for Empire listeners, Supra is now offering a limited deal. It is 12 months of Supra free for any Empire listener. You can go to supra.com, that's supra.com/blockworks. Limited time only. Go check it out. Thanks, Supra, for sponsoring Empire.
Welcome, everyone. Very excited for this podcast. We have Constantine, who I'll let him give his background, which is incredibly impressive. Not only one of the founders of Lido, but he has been, as I think of people that really understand crypto, like this term crypto native, he is someone that is really deep, close to the metal as a builder, but is also a extraordinary investor. He's been early on so many trends. And so it's a great pleasure to have him on. I think at a moment where there's just so much going on in crypto, we're coming out of what seems to be a struggle bull market. There's been incredible success in kind of the staking market. Now there's restaking. So that is something that we'd love to cover here. And I had the privilege of knowing Constantine because he was really kicking my ass when I was running validators at P2P. You know, I always thought that they were the smartest guys in the room. They really understood networks extremely well. And proof of that was really they just got like they were one of the winners, I think, of Game of Stakes, Cosmos, like incentivized testnet. And so when, you know, he was building Lido, for me, it was a no-brainer as people that would really understand how to build and set up Ethereum for this transition to proof of stake. And so, Constantine, welcome to the show. Really excited to have you on and make it a lively discussion.
Hey, Santiago. Hi, Yana.
So why don't we start with, but just, you know, generally we try to skip intros because they're just kind of, you know, people can go look you up. But give us a quick summary of your journey in crypto and, you know, kind of where you are now.
Yeah, I will try to be short. You know, like in general, I joined crypto in 2014. You know, like I first time heard about Bitcoin in 2011. But when I heard about that, because my friend, he said, let's buy some, like, video cards, you know, like GPUs, you know, like, and start mining, you know, like I said him, you know, like that, I don't want to do it. Why? Because it is a Ponzi scheme, you know, like that's how I feel about the blockchain. I didn't get anything, you know, like I tried to read white paper, but I didn't understand the benefits, you know, like, and then in 2014, you know, like when I had more time, I had already a business, you know, like that worked pretty well. I started, you know, like, back then, you know, like I want to move in another country, you know, like, because I was born in Russia and Russia economy, you know, like the trend was going down always, you know, like, and for me, you know, like I understand that I want to work in a space that is not connected with any country, you know, like, and doesn't have a country risk. And blockchain was a place that I choose, you know, like, and with my friend Dima Stradubtsov, you know, like I started to make research in blockchain, you know, like, and so I joined Cyberfund, and as a result, you know, like of our research in 2014, we did a report about blockchain assets. It was one of the first reports about new asset class, where we took all the space. So we take all their data from CoinMarketCap, you know, like all their projects that had public valuation with more than $100,000. It only was 100 of them, and analyze them, you know, like, and what we found out that it was some other projects like Bitcoin. First of all, it was a lot of Bitcoin forks, you know, like, but it was also some applications that were built on top of the blockchains. It was some new blockchains with a new consensus algorithm, you know, like how, I mean, it achieved security. For example, it was some first proof of stake experiments. And in general, we decided, you know, like, first of all, we had a thesis that it will, this market, because of some open source nature, open markets, and so on, you know, like, that it will grow faster than anything else, you know, like, and I started to dedicate full time, you know, like, to it as a Cyberfund co-founder. And in 2016, 2017, I run a fund. It did more than 7,000%, but we closed it. And in 2000, because you, and give all the money to our, like, investors, LPs. And in 2018, you know, like, I also closed Cyberfund, you know, like, and we distributed, you know, like, all, because we invested in Ethereum ICO, you know, like, we invested in Cosmos, we invested in Definity, in Polkadot, in all these early stage projects. So we generated some profit for us and distributed between the founders. In 2018, I started like P2P.org. P2P.org is a staking company. And why? Because I already got some money to retire, you know, like, but for me, you know, like, I wanted to, first of all, keep this market decentralized and censorship resistant. That's why I started P2P, because somebody need to run validators, you know, like, somebody need to run these nodes. And I understood that Ethereum will go into proof of stake, and in general, proof of stake will be big. And to understand blockchains better, to keep them decentralized and censorship resistant, I started P2P.org as a solo founder. And in 2020, Vasily joined the team, you know, like, in general, we did later spin-off and contributed to LidoDAO, you know, like, that is now pretty successful. Back then, we also co-founded Neil Foundation, that is now working on ZK sharding and on a scaling of Ethereum, and in the same time, days and nights, I continued to invest my capital. So I invested in Solana back then. We invested in Celestia, Lazy Ledger, Seed Stage. We also invested in Aguilera and in hundreds of other projects. And, you know, like, now, where I am now, you know, like, so I relaunched Cyberfund. In general, Cyberfund is fully, it's first of all, investment company. It doesn't have any external capital, you know, like, only, you know, like, it's, so we don't have any external capital. So I allocated my, equities that I have, for example, P2P.org, it is some, LIDA tokens, it is some, it's Neil equity, you know, like, and other equities in it. I'm not going to have dividends from it, but in general, it's a mission-driven organization that going to reinvest capital, you know, like, to achieve its mission. And the mission that we agreed together is to accelerate the economy, because we believe in acceleration, and we believe that it is a new economy coming. We call it cybernetic economy. And in general, we want to accelerate the cybernetic economy. But during acceleration, we understand that it is a lot of risk. And our goal is to accelerate economy in a healthy way. And for example, you know, like, I just want to give you a short example here. What we did in 2014, we wrote a first report in, and we call it cybernetic economy report. So this idea is from the beginning, you know, like, and when we wrote this report, we said that blockchain is only part of this economy, new economy. I mean, we look on blockchains like artificial intelligent networks, you know, like, we understand that it will be a lot of other piece of technology stack that bring to us more efficient and more healthy for humanity economy. And the blockchain is just a foundation layer. And from 2014 to 2023, we did a lot of work in Ethereum by investing. For example, we invested in Ethereum ICO. Then we participated and contributed to LIDA to keep it decentralized and censorship resistant. And we contribute a lot to make it healthy for humanity. In general, we want to do the same in the blockchain space by investing our capital, and also like in other areas, for example, in AI, robotics, maybe IoT and other part of future cybernetic economy.
Awesome. Constantine, I think there's a lot of areas I want to get your take on. The first is staking, right? Because you guys have a really unique background as investors. You are early backers of Ethereum, Cosmos, Polkadot, Solana, Celestia, Anoma, Eigenlayer, right? All these great things. You're also builders, right? P2P, Lido, Nil. So you have a really interesting view on the space. The first place maybe we can talk about is staking. So Lido has done phenomenally well, I'd say. I think the current market share is somewhere around 35 to 40%. And I think a lot of people in the industry kind of freak out a little bit about that market share, right? But if you actually, I saw one of your tweets about, look, if you extend this timeline out long enough, a lot of the, maybe Lido isn't the one to worry about. It's actually Coinbase or one of the centralized exchanges. As all of their ETH becomes, right, staked ETH, that market share could eventually cross 50%. So maybe just give us your kind of overview of like how you're looking at the staking market today, and then like tie in together this idea about market share.
Yeah, thank you for the question. In general, it's as I understand, as I remember, Lido market share is about 32%, not 35. The question is, you know, like first of all, as I told you, start to work on P2P.org, you know, like why I started this company was fully private, you know, like because I really believe that somebody need to run the validation nodes, you know, like, and in general, it's really hard, you know, like you should have a pretty lot of expertise to run it safe, you know, like to not get slashing, you know, and I also like understood that it will be a lot of, how to say, large companies, especially when ETF will come and so on. And it will be a lot of acquisition of staking companies. It will be a lot of, or stakes that will run by large institutional companies. And if, for example, one day we will come where it will be all run by states, it will be like a bad story for blockchains and the price. So, and also like the blockchain's value will go into zero. Why? Because, this network stopped to be censorship resistant. They can revert state and so on. And it's just database. It's not a blockchain anymore. And that's why I start to run P2P.org validation nodes to, first of all, understand the blockchains better. And second, you know, like to keep them decentralized and censorship resistant. And after when we like work on Cosmos and Polkadot, you know, like, and it was the next phase for the company and also for the market, Ethereum staking launch. Of course, we follow it from day one. We really understood that, first of all, I mean, we had a lot of competitors in validation markets, but all these competitors are our friends, you know, like in general, we have friends with Chorus. It was the Certus guys that were later acquired by Jam. It was some other players like Staking Facilities, Stakefish, many others like Figment, Block Diamond, you know, like in general, we compete with each other for market share. But, you know, like we, in the same time, we were friends. And our initial idea, we came to these guys and said, guys, let's like, I mean, what are your strategy on Ethereum? And all of them, like, okay, 50% of them didn't want to even to join validation node in Ethereum. Why? Because they didn't know how to attract stake in Ethereum, you know, like, and it's good when your network has, how to say, like, a lot of solo stakers, and they are really important, you know, like, it's really great when you have, like, thousands of different validators in the market. But in reality, you know, like, it's also important that it should be like professional players who really understand how to run a network to make it stable, you know, like, and if, for example, I knew everyone and like 50 or 60% didn't want to launch in Ethereum, it's bad for Ethereum. Why? Because, I mean, it will be like 10 professional validators, five big exchanges, and there are some tail of solo stakers, and network will be really centralized. Why? Because first of all, for Coinbase back then, for Binance, it was really easy to sell staking to their clients. You know, like, why? Because they already have it. They have a communication channel. The acquisition price is cheap. The LTV of these users is high, and they can even like give it for free. Why? Because, I mean, you will have a good retention to the exchange. And so all the incentives was around centralization. And when we come to this validators, we say, let's launch LIDAR together, you know, like in general. And this was initial idea, you know, like we even have this chat still now. But by some reason, you know, like nobody want to like build together, you know, like, and that's why, you know, like we start to work on it like personally, you know, like, and then engage them on a later stage. You know, like, and but the main objective, and the it's written in the mission of LIDAR, why LIDAR will launch, is to keep Ethereum decentralized and censorship resistant. And what we are also see that liquid staking will be successful, and it will be a big adoption. The same you can look on USDT and USDC market. But the issue with USDC and USDT market is that the more secure solution is, you know, like a custodial solution. Why? Because you can program. I mean, you can build a synthetic stablecoin, but if you want to build stablecoin backed by real dollars with low risk, it's look like, you know, like it's maybe even more safe what USDT and USDC built, you know, like, because smart contract risk is high. But when you build, you know, like liquid staking, it can be, I mean, why liquid staking is awesome? Because you can show all the, how to say, like all what blockchain can do. You can really build programmable smart contracts that operate all this, like, I mean, all this protocol. And I think liquid staking is really one of the great examples of technology regulation where you regulate rules. It's a great example of the DAOs. It's great examples of what blockchain give you, like transparency, open participation. And LIDAR did is, you know, like to build this MVP product that, first of all, try to get share of the market, you know, like, and also like try to fight with exchanges, you know, like, and build more decentralized solution where it will be not only Binance and like Kraken back then, and also like Coinbase that could have like 60% of staking. But LIDAR tried to give the same simple solution, you know, like, but in a more secure way.
Hmm. Is the end game for Ethereum to have, do you think 100% of ETH will eventually be staked?
This is a really like difficult question, you know, like, and in general, I really agree with some like researchers around MVI. I don't think that I don't believe that 100% ETH will be staked. And we can also look on other networks that are, for example, in Cosmos network, you have 20% APR and about 60% of ETH or Cosmos atoms are staked, you know, like, so it's not 80 or 90. And, still all the exchanges trade atom. And I don't think that it is a competition. And the question is how much should be staked? It's a good question. You know, like that's why when you design your protocol, you can have a target like emission, you know, like, so for example, you target the staking ratio of 60% or 50% or how Ethereum Foundation set about 25%, you know, like, and for me, you know, like, I really disagree. Not all, of course, I have a conflict of interest, you know, like, but in case of P2P, because I am also like one of the validators and their revenue depends from, you know, like, emission of Ethereum too, you know, like if you run Ethereum nodes, for example. Of course, I mean, in case of as a LIDAR contributor, I also kind of have issues here. But my position is, but I'm also like, yeah, hold a lot of ETH. For me, you know, like I think the biggest value of Ethereum is decentralization and biggest differentiation. I mean, decentralization contribute to security, you know, like, and that's why everybody want to build. And that's why on Ethereum, that's why the cheapest liquidity in Ethereum. And if you will harm, you know, like, decentralization by trying to, like, target the low staking ratio, for example, Ethereum Foundation proposed, I mean, it's not they propose to make MVI in general. They don't say that they target some type of percentage. You know, like some of them say that, some of them said that it is a little bit different as the economy. But in general, you know, like they want to target more that 30 million ETH should be staked. You know, like I think it's not a good solution. Why? Yeah. First of all, because Coinbase on their custody has 17 million of ETH. You know, like. And eventually, Coinbase is a corporation. And I really love Coinbase. You know, like, I'm not a hater of Coinbase. I think they build a great company. I mean, in general, Brian Armstrong is a great CEO. You know, like, in general, they build a great business and they are really positive for crypto, you know. But they are corporations that are work in some legal space, you know, like, and it's really a risk to Ethereum network. And also, as a corporation, they have a shareholders. And they need to maximize the profit as an agent, you know, like in the network, you know. And they eventually will try to stake all this 17 million ETH, you know, like maybe they will have even more. And for them, I mean, the price to run staking is the cheapest one. Why? Because you can, like, you can earn more, you know, on a scale with, if you will stake all the 17 million, you know, like you can spend lower in infrastructure compared with other, for example, professional validators one, because you can run a lot of validators on one node, you know, like, and you can optimize your cost and also your R&D, you know, like is cheaper for you. You can make it more secure. And it's what I try to say is that even with MVI, they can still try to get bigger, they will get bigger share, you know, like of the market, and they will eventually try to stake all the ETH. And if they will, for example, if you will target 30 million and 70 million will be staked by Coinbase one day, and also like with ETFs, because, you know, like ETFs are going to the market, and I think right. One day it will be staked ETFs. I mean, why not? Yeah. And there, a lot of them are holding assets on Coinbase, you know, like that means that, this can even amount of ETH on Coinbase can grow, you know, like, and this is a risk, you know, like if you will make a staking ratio low, you know, like that it may be, first of all, Coinbase will have an issue. Why? Because they have a conflict inside of their company, you know, like how to run, from one side, they need to make more money, you know, like from other side, if they will stake more than 50%, they will harm the network and destroy the value of Ethereum, you know, like. And I think if you don't get this mess in your research, you know, like, and you don't understand what can happen, and this is a pretty big and important, you know, like, step for all Ethereum community to, you know, like, to decide what should be emission of Ethereum and what staking ratio should be, you know, like we need, and this mistake can be so huge that will harm decentralization. And that's why, first of all, from CyberFund, we announced that our grant program, you know, like of $500,000 to researchers who want to make external research, not an Ethereum foundation, but external research.
I have a potentially really dumb question that I'm still going to ask anyways, which is if the amount of ETH that's staked ends up actually getting to be this huge number that we're talking about it being, there's two things that are going to happen. The yield is going to come down tremendously, I would say. So I'm curious if that's right or not. And then the second thing is as institution, you mentioned like, yeah, you know, the ETH ETFs, like eventually one day they'll be like probably staking inside of an ETH ETF. The take rate right now on something like Lido is 10, I think it's 10%. But as institutions come into the market, they're not going to be comfortable with that, right? They're, if it was TradFi, they would say, all right, you're 10%. You know, go to another staker. All right, you make me a competitive offer here. You make me a competitive offer here. And that's going to basically drive fees. That's fee compression, right? So both of those things are kind of like will have a negative impact on Lido's business, I would think, which is that, right, yield comes down and fee compression happens. I'm curious how you think about that, like as it relates to Lido's long-term business model.
I think, you know, like in case of Lido, any staking provider, you know, like what I'm really care is about like decentralization, you know, like, and the question is how it can be achieved, you know, like. And there, I think that decentralized setups, they have higher price, you know, like why? Because, I mean, you, for example, if you run, as I told you, by one entity, you know, like it will be much cheaper. And there, you know, like in case of, and that's why I think that, I mean, first of all, when you speak about ETFs and centralized solutions, you know, like you should understand that they not only care about their returns, they also like or rewards, they also care about like risk, you know, like and if and the risk is also high. For example, risk of counterparty, risk of custody, risk of some other like piece of infrastructure. And I think that their LIDA vision and the mission is, first of all, to make the most secure solution. And if it will be the most secure, and decentralization is part of that, you know, like the more decentralized it is and lower the risk, then it can be like, I mean, in a pretty good position, you know, like, and I don't think that it will be an issue. But the question is, so, and I don't know, maybe you read the last blog post of Mike Noether, you know, like with Starum, you know, like where they discuss, you know, like look on treasury market, you know, like bond market, and they discuss LST, LRTs, you know, like and Ethereum staking. It's like, I mean, a question is, you have different, you know, like return and rewards, but you have a different risk too. For example, LRTs with restaking don't just get rewards, you know, like they got a really different risk, you know, like the same is with the ETFs and so on, you know, like you have a lot of different parameters and there are rewards only part of them. You need to clear on risk, you know, like reward ratio.
Maybe we can move into restaking, Constantine. I'd be curious to get your take on just the, I think I saw one of your tweets, you said restaking represents a significant innovation. We'll need more time to fully grasp both its potential, but also the risks in the future. I'd be curious to get your take on, I guess, both of those things, the potential of restaking and the risks.
Yeah, first of all, I should disclose that CyberFund is a seed investor of Angular, you know, like, and I think that Sriram did a great job, you know, like to introducing this new primitive of restaking. And I mean, I see a lot of potential of it, you know, and in the same time, I mean, it is a risk, you know. I would look on it like an insurance, you know, like, for example, because people are, for now, you know, like it's a lot of adopters of restaking, but for now, restaking is not even activated. What we have is Aguilera that get a lot of assets that eventually farm, you know, like, or do some point or get some points, you know, like. But one, in April or like in next quarter, yes, it will be EigenGA introduced, you know, like that will be a first example of staking, you know, like, and also you should look that on some other markets, you know, we also, I think P2P participated in development of Neutron, you know, like restaking is already works. For example, Cosmos Hub, you know, like activated Neutron, and Neutron doesn't have a, like validator set, you know, like in general, it's run by Cosmos validator set. And in general, all the security is already, you know, like provided by Cosmos Hub. And Neutron is running a virtual machine for Cosmos Hub. So it is already like some examples that in production, in general, Angular is not activated yet. And I'm looking on it that in restaking, first of all, you get rewards, but you also get a lot of, you should have a risk because nobody ready to pay for you, for example, I don't know, billions of TVL without slashing. Why? Because, I mean, it's not, they will not pay you a lot. Why? Because in general, it means that you don't have any risk. And for me, you know, like an insurance market, you know, like I think that it's really question how to price this risk, you know, like why? Because, and we always see what's happening in insurance, especially in new markets, you know, like people are underestimate the risk because it's not clear a way how to measure it. And, but the risks are happening usually, you know, like, and I think that Angular are doing a lot to launch in the right way, you know, like to try to mitigate all the risk and try to, I mean, do a lot of research on it and launch by stages. But still, you know, like we will see some You know, like I think some like risk that will be still happened, you know, like in some networks. For example, it can be some type of slashing, it can be some type of new attacks, you know, like that we underestimate, you know, like, and so on. So for me, you know, like risk taking is, first of all, you know, like you can look on the market, you know, and when you look on the market, I mean, people already risk take this in some way. First of all, they use stake this in a lending. And we also can say that this is some type of utility, you know, like where people get some, you know, assets under some type of the risk. For example, you can look on leverage staking. What leverage staking is when you deposit stake this, for example, on an hour, you lend some ETH, stake it again, and do it again and again. And you grow your, like, staking rewards, you know, like, for example, from 3% to 15%. And I mean, in general, what it is, it's some type of, you know, like risk taking. Why? Because you get the risk, you know, like of slashing, but not slashing, but liquidation. If the price of stake this to this will going down, you will be liquidated, you know. Like. But in the same time, you get rewards. So you got this arbitrage of a lending price and staking, you know. And I think this is already example that a lot of people are using stake this in this way, where they are already do leverage staking, you know, like, and it will be a lot of other examples of how people will reuse staked assets, for example, in protocols like Aguilera is building. And I think it will be a lot of new AWSs that will, how to say, will accept different type of assets. Some of them will accept Bitcoins, some of them will accept USDT maybe, some of them some other. And finally, you know, like we will have a large hype, you know, like so a lot of assets will come to this market. But and also it will generate a lot of tokens that maybe will later lose a price. So, I mean, it will be really very speculative market. It will have a lot of risk. And eventually, you know, like it's short term, you know, like so middle term, I think that, I mean, we will be not so hyped around that. Why? Because the fees that will be generated will be not so high. I mean, if you look on all the networks, you know, like even Solana is not producing a lot of fees. And long term, risk taking will generate fees, you know, like it will be some use cases that will be really profitable, you know, like that will really generate, I think, a lot of fees. And yeah, this is my vision on risk taking.
Nice. What do you think the Ethereum Foundation got right over the last couple of years, Constantine? What did they get wrong?
I think, you know, like Ethereum Foundation has improved a lot, you know, like in case of delivery, you know, I mean, and part of that is was a competition from other protocols, you know, like that. And also, part of that was a strategy where it was funding of initial like client teams. And in general, I mean, a lot of clients teams, they were underfunded, you know, like, I remember how I met one of the team, you know, like, and they told when I think Lido did a pretty big grant, about $10 million, you know, like to Protocol Guild. And we met the team and they said us, thank you for the grant that was given in 2021, in the beginning of 2021. And it was $50,000 grant, you know, like, and they said, oh, if you didn't give us this $50,000 grant together with three another team, this will like, we will not hear, you know, like, and what I try to say is that, first of all, now the teams are more funded. They are executing much better. And I mean, it's continuous development, you know, like, I mean, it's a lot of discussion, a lot of good researchers, new faces like Mike Noether and so on, you know, like, and I think that, first of all, 1559 change Ethereum a lot, you know, like it will build a narrative that is not played yet, you know, like I think in this bull run, you know, like 1559 will maybe help Ethereum to flip Bitcoin even, you know, like I really like a big believer in such type of economy. And also like that, I mean, all the roadmap were designed around data availability. It's also righteous and rollups. So I see that Ethereum Foundation, you know, like improving a lot. I still think that decision is maybe like centralized, you know, like around, I mean, it is, of course, I mean, maybe it's the most decentralized now that we have, but it's still not clear. For example, with all this MVI, you know, like it was, discussed a lot internally, you know, like then it was proposed and how it will go, how the decision will go. I think that MVI is the most controversial proposal that Ethereum have for the long time, and it will be a good check of decentralization and decision making, you know, like how it will go. Why? Because I mean, it is a lot of opinions, and in all core devs, you know, like a lot of people has different opinions, and it's really important for Ethereum, important decision. And I think that such type of controversial proposals will make Ethereum even more strong, you know, like why? Because immunity start to be activated. And I think that decentralization and Ethereum social layer with immunity is one of the, it's two biggest, you know, like thing around Ethereum, you know, like it's make it, impossible to compete, you know, like, and this is Eversum.
Hey everyone, wanted to give a big shout out to today's sponsor, Wormhole Foundation, stewards of the Wormhole Protocol. If you are like Santi and I and you play around on chain, you know how bad the cross-chain experience is today. Well, Wormhole has set out to solve that, powering cross-chain transfers for over 200 different multi-chain teams, including some of the best like Uniswap and Circle. So what does that mean for you, the Empire listener? This opens up a huge number of multi-chain use cases across DeFi, NFTs, governance, oracles, and more. By supporting over 30 different blockchains and 6 different runtimes, including Sui, Solana, different ETH L2s, Ethereum, and a whole bunch more. That means you have now the most powerful interoperability platform at your fingertips. If you're a developer, you'll be excited to hear that Wormhole provides an extensive suite of tools and infrastructure so that you can securely build multi-chain applications. But don't just take our word for it, obviously. Wormhole Protocol leads the industry in all-time messages transferred with over 900 million cross-chain messages. 900 million, that is close to a billion, and that's a big number of messages. As a thank you, Wormhole Foundation is dropping exclusive NFTs. That's right. We got some exclusive NFTs for Empire listeners. Hit the link in the description to claim your unique Wormhole NFT today. This episode is brought to you by Monad. Monad's thesis is simple. The EVM is here to stay, similar to JavaScript and Web 2, but unfortunately, today's EVM lacks the high performance and the scalability that developers need to make certain applications possible. Monad addresses these concerns and these bottlenecks while preserving seamless EVM composability for application developers. There's a seamless transition to Monad as the Ethereum RPC API allows for really easy portability. And for developers, Monad can support 10,000 real transactions per second with their unique parallel execution environment. And of course, there's full compatibility with EVM bytecode. Monad's internal DevNet is live. Public testnet comes out soon. You can join Monad's journey in two ways. One, go follow them. They're on Twitter at Monad, M-O-N-A-D underscore XYZ. And also join the Monad Discord. It's discord.gg/Monad. Big thanks to Monad for sponsoring Empire. This episode is brought to you by Shardium. Shardium is an EVM-based, linearly scalable smart contract platform that provides low gas fees while maintaining security through dynamic state sharding. Shardium's auto-scaling works by automatically adjusting the resources of the system or the application based on predefined rules and metrics. What this means is that when an application on Shardium goes viral, gets big, right, the network reacts by independently adding more active validator nodes from the standby node pool to increase throughput capacity. This does 4 things. It lowers energy consumption, lowers cost, improves load management, and protects app failures. You can learn more about Shardium or even spin up your node at shm.gg/validator. That's shm.gg/validator. Big thanks to Shardium for sponsoring Empire. This episode is brought to you by Supra, an Oracle provider across over 50 different blockchains. Whether it's critical price levels or liquidation triggers, beat your competition to the punch with Supra. It's as good as having the first mover advantage on every price update. Supra offers fast oracles and DVRF free for 12 months at supra.com/blockworks for a limited time only. So you're going to want to bank on this 12-month free offer as soon as possible. And if you're just listening and you know any builders, you can earn $1,500. That's $1,500 that you can go throw into Bonk or Whiff or whatever meme coin you like by letting them know about this deal. They can get fast oracles today free for 12 months, and you get $1,500 for the referral. You can visit supra.com/blockworks to learn more. Go check them out. Tell them Santi sent you. Tell them Jason sent you. We got you back. Thanks, Supra, for sponsoring.
As someone that has spent a lot of time close to the metal building in crypto and investing, you know, what do you think? I'd like to just spend some time on Ethereum and the scalability roadmap. You're also playing in other ecosystems. What do you think Ethereum has gotten really right over the years? You mentioned EIP 1559, the transition to proof of stake. And also, what do you think Ethereum hasn't gotten right? And perhaps what are the reasons why Ethereum may not live up to the potential that you're talking about in a scenario where it flips Bitcoin and perhaps another ecosystem, whether it be Solana, Sui, these next-gen blockchains, really surpass Ethereum? So let's start with, what do you think are the things Ethereum has gotten right? What are the things in Ethereum hasn't gotten right? And in what scenarios does Ethereum lose its competitive edge that it has today?
Yeah, my opinion, you know, like Ethereum did, you know, like, so it's really difficult question, you know, I mean, to, for me, when you look back, I think the right direction was to choose, this roll-up strategy, you know, like from one side, of course, I mean, each rollup can compete with Ethereum, you know, like because they can run on the availability, you know, like, and eventually be on L1 or Validium. From other side, you know, like Ethereum is like still it's decentralized and it's look like a root chain, you know, like, and it's really secure. And the liquidity is the cheapest one there. I think that, for me, you know, like it was different positioning and different vision, you know, like Ethereum had one vision, you know, like that it should so not scale, you know, like, for example, like Solana. And Solana has another vision that they want to scale L1, you know, like, and make a lot of composability around that, you know, like. And I think that, Ethereum, for me, you know, like, I think that Ethereum is doing everything right. And of course, we can say, it was a long transformation to proof of stake. It was like not some years that they couldn't execute, you know, like, and deliver, you know, like new upgrades, you know, like, and it was like some type of crisis, you know, like, but when you, it's really, I mean, easy to look outside of their, you know, like development, but when you look on other companies, when you look on other blockchains, you know, like, I mean, you can have like ideal track, but it's impossible. You still need to build this muscle, you know, like muscle of research, muscle of development, muscle of something that, like some other parts, you know, like. And I think in Ethereum it was now built, you know, like now Ethereum has really one of the strongest research, you know, like, and one of the strongest community. It's real. Ethereum really has teams who execute well. And so for me, you know, like, I think that, the current roadmap, you know, like, the last one was published by Mike, you know, like, is the right one. But what I would focus more is, and will try to deliver faster, is I was focused on main clients of Ethereum. It's rollups. I mean, maybe it is some applications and so on, and try to prioritize the features for them. You know, because sometimes it's more about theoretic improvement, you know, like, for example, and it is a lot of different logic. For example, why do we need 32 ETH stake, not 1,000, and so on. So we need to do this research better. We need to have more external research. For example, this on an example of MVI, you know, like, so Ethereum Foundation, of course, did a lot of great work here, but I don't think that they go deeper in validators economy, that they calculated what will be the validator set in current staking ratio. And in general, it would be great if it would fund more external teams, you know, like who will do research and maybe have different opinions around that, because this is a pretty, important, you know, like improvement. Also, now Ethereum Foundation in next hard fork will deliver triggerable withdrawals. I think it will make all this liquid staking, risk taking much more better. You know, like, why? Because the protocols could mitigate a lot of risk if validators, for example, don't want to unstake, and their protocols can be more permissionless. And that is a pretty significant improvement. And so I think that prioritization of the features, you know, like, should go from main Ethereum users. For example, if Uniswap is burning like 20% of the gas, it should have more voice, you know, like in Ethereum development. If rollups, you know, like are the future, it means that these rollups can have, you know, like influence on the Ethereum roadmap. But I think that we eventually come in this, you know, like to the state where, you know, like Ethereum Foundation listen more, you know, like the key players on the market.
Mm-hmm. Maybe as a segue to that, as a key player, I think Lido being, and I know you don't speak on behalf of Lido, but, you know, as someone that's involved in the ecosystem, how has it gotten better or worse trying to engage with the Ethereum Foundation core developers to, you know, make some proposals?
I think, you know, like, I mean, it's pretty open. The question is that you need to really, like, be proactive, you know, like, and for example, it's more about resources of each team. For example, is it a roll-up or is it a large DAO, you know, like, and the question is, if you are proactive, if you did a good research, if you're going to all core devs, you have a voice. You will be heard, you know, like, and also, it can be implemented. So I think that it's a lot improved, you know, like, the Ethereum, like, development is the most open development, as I know, for example, you know, like, it has a systematic goals. It's improved a lot, you know, like, and everybody, and I think, like, everyone, every, like, party who really contribute a lot to Ethereum can participate, and this is really important.
Mm-hmm. I want to double-click on restaking. I know you're early investor in Eigenlayer. How credible or real do you think are the criticisms of, you know, we constantly hear rehypothecation of security, this being a potentially existential threat to Ethereum if something were to go down? I also think of when people were really focused on Lido and, you know, if something were to go wrong with Lido, you know, there's a big stake there, smart contract bug or whatnot. But maybe help us bring more nuance to that discussion, because I don't think it's like, I haven't heard like a very comprehensive discussion. Eigenlayer team put out a great set of like frequently asked questions last month, and I think that was a good document, but I'd love if you could share your perspective as how you think of these risks and what would be the potential kind of biggest vectors here.
Yeah, I think, you know, like, first of all, I really believe in the market power, you know, like, and I think that, I mean, market can solve a lot of issues, you know, like, and the protocol design, of course, we can, and also, like, Angular is doing a lot of, spending a lot of time to research and also, like, understand how to launch this, or, you know, like, liquid staking in a safe mode, you know, like, really more careful to not get any risk. I think it's even, like, sometimes bad. Why? Because it's better when, you know, like, the risk will happen on small scale, then it will happen, like, if you will eventually build everything without slashing, without any risk, you know, like, in general, you will generate a lot of tokens, make a lot of adoptions, and then there is a risk will happen, you know, like, so for me, I think it's even, like, maybe, like, it should be even, like, more open and permissionless, you know, like, where anyone can participate. But for me, you know, like, again, I think, first of all, look on lending markets, for example. It is a lot of assets in lending markets, and it's a lot of staked Ethereum. It's a lot of other more assets. And it was a lot of examples, even like like how Maker Oracles works and so on, and in DeFi. I don't think that, I mean, it's really like large in current state, you know, like that in next couple of years, it is a large risk for Ethereum. Why? Because, like if it will be like even like 30% is unstaked by some really like large, like, slashing, you know, like on Angular, I don't think that it's in any way harm Ethereum network, you know, like it will work as it should. What really I worry more is manipulating of Ethereum state, you know, like by restaking, for example, if somebody will try to manipulate it in a bad way, you know, like, for example, bribe, you know, like validators, you know, like, and they will try to do something wrong. This worry me much more. Also, like, I think that it can be a lot of risk for the capital, you know, like, if all, I mean, that this RSS can bring, but I don't think that it is a large risk for Ethereum itself. Why? Because, you know, like, I mean, first of all, not all ETH will be staked and restaking. I mean, first of all, it will not generate so much fees, you know, like, I think. The second is, if it will be some, you know, like splashing, you know, like it is some way, first of all, how to make it more like secure for Ethereum layer one, you know, like, for example, you can slash LRTs or like you can do some other type of slashing. And I really like things that for now we are in a like hype of restaking, you know, like where it's a lot of esteem, like we really like think have a lot of, how to say, estimation, you know, like we really believe that it will be a lot of rewards, but I don't think that, I think that it's too much like hype and really like, I mean, the reality will be a little bit different, you know, like, I mean, that we don't get so much rewards and general restaking will be just another market, like, staking or like for example like lending, you know, like, and so on. And I mean, mm-hmm. It will eventually need to be proved by fees that all this application will, you know, like will generate. And also for me, it's a question in a lot of examples of restaking, why do you need restaking and you're not launching own token, for example. It was today discussion of our Vitalik, you know, like in a Twitter. And I think that I agree with Sunny, you know, like that for a lot of use cases, you don't need, for some like use cases, you really, restaking will work really well. But for a lot of them, you know, like, I mean, own token is also work well, you know, like, and pretty secure, especially if it created on Ethereum layer one, you know, like, and if you slash not Ethereum, but you slash like Polygon token, for example, what is the difference if you don't try to manipulate the proposers or like validators?
Yeah, not to make this a whole segment on restaking, but would you agree on Eigenlayer in and of itself, like, staking doesn't rehypothe introduce more leverage to the system. Mm-hmm. Perhaps the biggest risk is on the restaking, where there may be less competent operators that mm-hmm. may promise higher yield. And if there is a bug, if there is a hack, if there's an issue in some of these restakers in that loop of leverage, that may be the biggest risk in this kind of like DeFi summer craziness. Yields, people are chasing the highest yield opportunities without appreciating the risk. The risk may be more contained because it may not be as centralized, right? Like perhaps there'd be more distributed stake among these restakers, but I don't know if you would agree with that. And if so, if you've thought of like mechanisms that can mitigate the containment or the contagion effects of, you know, an event like that.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, you know, like, I mean, if it will be like a bad apparatus, you know, like that will flash some amount of ETH, you know, like will it in any way touch L1, you know, like I don't think that L1 will have any issues here. But of course, people can lose money. But this is a new, in general, you know, like this is what should happen, you know, like if it is a risk, it means that some risk should happen, you know, like if it is rewards. The question is, you can get rewards, I mean, for what you're paying if it's zero risk, you know. And that is, I think, the biggest question. Because in my opinion here, that eventually we will start with zero risk, you know, like because it ideally will try to mitigate it, you know, like in some way. And with high rewards, you know, like because it will be a lot of protocols that will just generate tokens, you know, like, with not a lot of value, but with high price because of their market hype, you know, like, and later, you know, like the market start to be more like equal, you know, like where it is a risk, you know, like, and it is a TVL, you know, like, and maybe even like we will underestimate the risk one day, you know, like, and then the risk will happen, you know, like, and then we will find the equilibrium. But what we need to understand how to price this risk. And without that experience, without the launch of these protocols, you know, like, we will don't know, you know, like, I mean, we are don't know what, and also, like, I think it's a good comparison with the insurance company, you know, like, why? Because first of all, I mean, it is a policy, you know, like, that defined what is the risk, you know, like you cover by this TVL. Second, it is a capital. And the third one, you know, like it's slashing that should happen, you know, like, or if it's zero slashing, maybe then the price should be low and it will not generate so much fees, you know, like. And that is what we need to, like, really, like, find by the market. And now market don't know how to estimate it, how much to pay, you know, like what is the slashing risk? And is it a risk for people who deposit, you know, like, is there? Yes, of course. I mean, it is a risk. It's like in DeFi, you know, like if you ever like deposited in a farm, you know, like during DeFi summer, you also got the risk of, you know, like smart contracts. But for example, some smart contracts was autonomous. For example, like smart contracts where the risk was low. And that's why a lot of capital use it, you know, like, but what they did, they just pre-mined tokens. And then we all see that, I mean, this mechanic doesn't work, you know, like, and the market stopped to do it in this way. And the same will happen to restaking, you know, like it will be a lot of tokens that will be generated and maybe even it will be safe or like with some risk. And then, you know, like the market and the protocols will stop creating. Well, if it is no risk, you know, like they will stop to pay so much.
Constantine, I'd love to maybe switch gears a little bit and get your take on. So the first time I ever heard you on a podcast was actually the Bankless podcast with Santi, mm-hmm. and it was a Solana podcast. And I think it was Q4 2021. I'd love to get your general take on, I mean, you're about as big of an, I think, ETH bull as one can get with what you've founded, but also what you've invested in. I'd love to get your take on things like Solana, Celestia, some of these other ecosystems that are starting to get some steam.
Yeah, first of all, you know, like I think that in general, I'm really I'm working in 2014, you know, from 2014 in crypto, you know, like, and days and nights, you know, like almost without weekends and vacations, you know, and I really love it, you know, like I really love people who is working in this space. I really love builders, you know, like, and I love Ethereum, you know, like, why? Because they built really like this social consensus, this legitimacy, you know, like decentralization and so on. But from other side, we have other ecosystems that did a lot of innovations too, you know, like, for example, Cosmos relaunched for this restaking already, you know, like in some way. It is also like Solana that is like building like a different vision, you know, like, and what I think is important that all these people are pushing our market in just forward, you know, like they're accelerating, for example, Solana by competition accelerated Ethereum development, you know, and this is a super great, you know, like, and for me, you know, well, I'm really like pro acceleration. I really think that we one day will have more fair economy, you know, like economy run by data, that will based on blockchain, you know, like on open data, with all this AI and ML stuff, you know, like we can be more efficient, you know, like, and more equal, you know, like now people live in the best their time, you know, like they have more food, they're more healthy, you know, like it's of course worse, but it's, I mean, not so many like it was before. And I think that, I mean, like it's one of the best time for humanity and it will be only better. And that's why I am pro acceleration. And I think that when you invest, you know, like in Cosmos, and you invested in Celestia, you invested in Solana, you are helping to test the hypothesis, you know, like you are, and all like the ideas to really like build a better like piece of technology that will help to build you this decentralized, not only decentralized, but more this digital world, you know, like this supercomputer one day. And I think that the market is huge and it will be a lot of players, you know, like I think that Ethereum is clear winner from last bull run, you know, like, but it's really hard to compete with Ethereum and Celestia, you know, like Solana, Cosmos and others did a pretty great job, you know, like by building another vision, you know, like we don't know which vision is right, you know, like we can only bet by buying these tokens and selling these tokens, you know, like, and but, you know, like, or choose, you know, like on which side you are, you know, like by investing in it, you know, like, and contributing to these protocols. And for me, you know, like, I don't think that I changed my mind from 2021, you know, like I'm still on the same page, you know, like I really love Ethereum, you know, like, and, but at the same time, I'm happy what building like Tolly, you know, like I'm happy that he didn't stop after all this stuff that happened, you know, like I, it was a really hard for him, you know, like I'm sure it's, but he really like, keep building, you know, like days and nights. And I really love it, you know, like why? Because generally, finally, what we want to build is censorship resistant, like machine, you know, like for all humanity. And doesn't matter who will win, if we will keep it decentralized and censorship resistant, for me, if it will be even win another system that I didn't invest, I didn't know them, and but they will deliver these values, I will be already winner, you know, like, and that is like my like vision.
Konstantin, I'm going to zoom way out from some of the niche topics that we're talking about here. And I'd love to, I read this cybernetic post that you posted, or the cyber economy 8 years ago. I found it on your blog actually. And it was talking about kind of capitalism. There's like two systems, socialism and capitalism. And now there's this kind of new system, cyber economy. I'd love to hear that, how that thesis has developed. And if you still believe that, cause that was what was 8 years ago, 2016, right? So I'd love to hear how that thesis has developed. I'd also be curious how this thesis came out of your, like, just your time in Russia and like how your views on crypto has been influenced by just like, I don't know, your childhood in Russia.
Yeah, you know, like, thank you for a great question. I think that we have this idea in like 2014, 2015. But what I try to say always that, I mean, people are now saying a lot that AI or like ChatGPT or LLMs, they hallucinate a lot. What I can say, what I want to say is that, you know, like people are hallucinating even more, you know, like, so, I mean, back then, you know, like in 2014, 2015, we didn't know, or we couldn't imagine, you know, like how this ecosystem will evolve, you know, like, and we were just believers, you know, like who really tried to imagine, you know, like how the smart contracts Ethereum network will evolve, what will be the future, and our like concept of cybernetic economy in general that will find the equilibrium between capitalism and socialism, you know, like where in general it will find this equilibrium. Why? Because we will have more data, you know, like why? Because we will have more efficient economy. And what we need, first of all, we need more public layer, and at the same time we need like AI and other like things that will help us to generate objective, you know, like information. And I think that, I mean, we had this vision and we had a lot of hallucination back then. And now, you know, like, I mean, we are with all this launch, you know, like with all this, I mean, with all our development of AI, with all the development in blockchains, I really see that this future is coming, you know, like, I mean, we are really closer to it. And I was happy to relaunch Cyberfund with the same vision, you know, like, that we need to achieve it. In general, I really believe that capital and technology will come together, you know, like on blockchain, you know, like, and and singularity will come. Maybe one day we don't have money, you know, like, and what we can do, we can just build it, you know, like we can just accelerate it. We can help and make it more healthy for humanity. And that's what we are doing.
I just thought ETH was money. So in a world where there's no money, then what do we have? No, I'm kidding.
You know, like, I mean, it's funny because, I mean, we don't know, but the question, we need to achieve it, you know, like we need to achieve another level of society. And the question is how, and I think that capitalists work really well, but can be it more efficient? Yes, of course. And we are building these technologies, you know, like, and there maybe like one day with singularity, we will don't need to work anymore. Or like, I mean, the society will change a lot. And and I think that it's great. I mean, first of all, it's inevitable, you know, like, so we can't change it. Even if I will do nothing and will retire, it will happen. But what we can do, we can just bet and try to make this world better, you know, like, for example, but not by not investing in states, but by investing in Ethereum, you know, like, and also mm-hmm. like try to make it happen faster. And that's what we are doing.
Yeah. I want to ask you two questions. The first one, what has surprised you the most in your crypto journey?
Yeah, what surprised me most? Good question. I mean, it was so many surprises. First of all, I mean, one of the surprises is because in 2014, I had zero experience in development, you know, like for IT products, you know, like that it's, first of all, so hard to build this new layer and build adoption around it. You know, like, for example, Ethereum proof of stake took 6 years, you know, like when I are like, listen now, like these guys who are building AI, you know, like, and they say, oh, AGI will be in 3 years or some type of AGI. I really understand that as I underestimate a lot of complexity, you know, like, and I mean, it will take much, 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 much more time, you know, like, and I think this was a big surprise, you know, like how much time it can take. So another surprise is, you know, like I can't even, I don't have an answer here, you know, like, I mean, it's in general, you know, like every day I'm like, I'm reading a lot of Twitter, like, and as all everyone, you know, like maybe now people are reading more Forecaster, but you know, like, and in general, I really like enjoying my time in crypto, you know, like, and I'm enjoying how the crypto is evolving, you know. Of course, we are focused more on infrastructure, so we are focused on 1% of, you know, like projects in crypto, but people who are working in it, you know, like, they are really awesome. And I mean, I really love it. And And Santiago, what is, well, maybe you can answer here. What surprised you more? You know, like, can you tell us?
Um, I think there's not a day that goes by that I don't like appreciate, but I'm in constant awe of the how crypto is fitting in the kind of the jigsaw puzzle of how the world is shaping up, both in good and bad ways. Like crypto, I think, comes at the right time. Unfortunately, the world has become more centralized, has become more polarized. There's more distrust of institutions. And that has always been, like, I think, immediately what you are drawn to when you discover something like Bitcoin. But then you layer on top, like, AI. And I just think that crypto, the more I think of it, the more I'm surprised of how integral crypto is to solving some of the biggest challenges that we are facing, but also the biggest opportunities of unlocking a step function improvement in how we coordinate the fabric of society. It's really tough when you look at people and they ask you why crypto, and you say, well, because I think it's the most socioeconomic transformation of our time. And they're like, seriously? Like, isn't that a casino? Why wouldn't you say something like biotech? Why wouldn't you say something like AI? And I'm like, certainly those two areas like have a ton of importance. Why? Because they're closer to the real human experience. Unfortunately, crypto struggles because it's a bit farther removed. It's on the back end, right? And it is difficult. No one kind of says, like, it's difficult to like tangibly see crypto as something that really transforms the fabric of society. Whereas if you see a vaccine, it's like, it's a vaccine. But I think crypto will power all of that. It will improve coordination by orders of magnitude. Therefore, money moves faster. Ideas get discovered faster and get funded faster. And that has a downstream effect in biotech, in AI. And I think bringing it all together, the thing that surprised me the most is that I didn't fully appreciate the big picture. And I've said it recently, and I'll say it again here, is I think I'm earlier to crypto today than what I was in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Because now I have a better and deeper appreciation and understanding of how tangibly transformative this can be. And I'm a bit scared that it is happening all in real time. And I just thought that it would take much longer, and it probably will, but it's just fucking crazy. Like it is a privilege to be here and to be a part of it and like be living and breathing it. And you know, that kind of gets you through the bear market. Can it get you through the moments where it's difficult too, right? To build in the open and to be in crypto sometimes, but it's incredibly rewarding too.
So, yeah. I mean, that's definitely amazing, you know, like, and there are really like, that's why I also love to invest capital, you know, like not only build, because you also can help some people, you know, like to build their ideas, you know, like, for example, we just founded Metalex, you know, like, and they're building this cybernetic organization, cyborgs. And I really understand that, I mean, it's impossible to change, the world, you know, like, because I mean, legal is so old, you know, like, and I mean, it's really like adopt innovation not so fast. From one side, we are lucky, let's say, not so fast. From our other side, you know, like, it brings a lot of issues. And also, I really, when I built my project, when I built like this new products, you know, like, I really get so much new experience, you know, like, and I really understand that. For Web2 developers, for people who are outside of crypto, to build a DAO, to build a decentralized autonomous organization is almost impossible. Why? Because you need to learn the basic stuff, you know, like, and it takes years. You need to make a lot of mistakes. You need to really do a lot. And if you'll try to, to build some basic stuff, like as infrastructure, as a framework, you know, like, for example, these new organizations that really like designed like DAOs in the right way, that are really work with legal frameworks, you know, like that don't generate a lot of risk for founders and so on. This infrastructure that we are building can really, like, long term, you know, like, bring a lot of new founders and really change our landscape a lot, you know, like, and that's why for me, I really like try to find this groundbreaking things, you know, like for example, yeah. MetalX, that is a big building, like from one side, like a legal firm, you know, like from other side, you know, like technology to really launch a new type of organizations and make it more simple. And eventually it will come to, like, as you said, you know, like to new economy. And crypto is like one of the foundations of it, you know, like, and when you come to AI now, you know, it's also interesting. Why? Because when you speak with investors who invested in AI, usually they are not so technology heavy. And, you know, like a lot of infrastructure in AI, cryptography and so on, they really have a lot of intersection with crypto. And it's really interesting how, you know, investors from crypto can be really like good investors in AI and also like teach people, founders from AI, how they can use blockchain. Also, like, I mean, blockchain can use AI in some way, you know, like, for example, we can have a second opinion from assistant on DAO proposals. We can have a lot of other things from AI. Like AI can have a lot of things from their like blockchains, build some incentives on tops, have like accounts for AI agents, you know, like on top and build economy, open economy on it. And also like, so I mean, all of this will merge, you know, like, and I think that we are really like, I mean, in the best place ever, you know, like for humanity, you know, like, and we have this really chance where technology is so fast that it's impossible to, I mean, I think that for people, and for humanity, it's really impossible to run so fast, and one day it will evolve, you know, like in singularity. And we will, I hope that this all will create a better and more fair place for more people on the planet. Especially, Jana, you asked me about, you know, like my Russian experience here. So, I mean, I was born in Russia, and and for me, you know, like, I mean, all this economy, like corruption, a lot of other things really like push me away, you know, like, so I moved from Russia like more than 5 years ago. And I mean, all what's happening, you know, like, I mean, in general, from one side, it was a lot of IT companies that were grow, you know, because nobody touched them, you know, like in Russia. And it was a lot of clever people, and it is a lot of clever people there. From other side, you know, like all this, bureaucracy, I mean, like all these politics guys, you know, like the trend was going down always, you know, like, I mean, it's really bring me to where I want to build business outside of Russia. Why? Because, you know, like, I really understand that it's impossible. And also, like, outside of any country, so global, just open a computer and work, you know, like in a global space. And I think that crypto make it happen, you know, like, because I am a guy from Kaliningrad, a small city that is between Lithuania and Poland, you know, like, invested in Ethereum, I saw, you know, like, and like many other projects by Bitcoins, you know, like, and that was, it is awesome, you know, like, it's destroyed, like, Silicon Valley, you know, like, funds that, you know, like, only has this opportunity to invest and give it to everyone. And I think that maybe, like, new ICO platform is not so bad idea, you know, like, because we really need to find a way how to fund new talents and give opportunity to everyone. And I mean, now, like, it is a war in Russia that started by Russia, and it's really, like, I mean, the worst time, you know, like, and I don't have any, like, words, you know, like, I don't know, will I ever back to this country, you know, like, why? Because it's not clear how, I mean, the trend can be changed, you know, like, I mean, it's not clear how, I mean, it's a lot of propaganda, people are listening it, you know, like, they had hard opinion, and it's, I don't see any good way.
Let me tell you about how in the 15th century, Tsarist Russia and the roots of Ukraine. I'm kidding. You know, that's how the interview with Putin started, with Carson Tucker. But now it's really, I mean, I think it's very exciting and refreshing to hear your takes as both a builder and an investor. And I think more and more people are realizing how crypto can improve coordination and really facilitate. When you're exchanging value, people start caring more. Otherwise, they don't care. They have attention span and, you know, they lose interest. But crypto, that's why speculation is so important, and you're transacting value. So with DAOs, with everything, there's skin in the game. So the hope is that, you know, ideas get discovered faster. Founders from every background place get funded. And that's really exciting, right? Someone like you, you know, or how many projects have you backed that you do care? You don't even look at a resume. You don't care if they have a 4-year education. It's like, show me your GitHub repo. Show me what you built. And it is a very competitive market. It's open source. And the beauty of that is that, you know, projects like Lido or others can really go on this escape velocity because money's moving at the speed of light from every corner of this world, and people are constantly looking at it. Yes, it's adversarial. There's exploits will be exploited, but over time, there's Lindy built in. There's resiliency, and that creates, I think, the backbone and infrastructure for kind of the value layer of the internet. And I don't know what that's going to look like. Like, no one could predict that Uber would come out of smartphones, but like, it's so hard to predict how technology is going to impact and the kind of applications. But I feel like more and more, like, you have this like fundamental belief and conviction that there's probably no better way to transact in a digital manner than through open, decentralized, distributed blockchains. And it's going to fit into so many of the things that we're seeing now. And that unlocks not only a lot of efficiencies in the current systems, but so many applications that we haven't even begun to imagine. We can't even imagine, surmise today. Maybe you can, I can't. But you're just going to be here, and hopefully you're going to catch the big ones, right? So I've said it, and just to round it out, but I've said it time and time again, I've felt that the best investors in crypto are founders or are very close, or like are building, are actively participating in these networks. And I think you're just the hallmark of what that means, because you're doing both. And, you know, I don't think there's luck that you've been able to find and back at the earliest of stages some of the leading projects time and time again over the many years you've been in the space. So big congrats to you. Any parting thoughts? I think this has been a great discussion. A lot of things we've covered, but I don't know if there's anything else you want to touch on before we leave.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I want just to tell you, like, or to tell everyone, you know, like, who listens to this podcast, you know, like, that they should keep building, you know, like, every day. And I think it's the biggest opportunity in their life, you know, like, I mean, we also continue building. Let's build together, you know, like, we also, like, actively investing, you know, like, in all this intersection, blockchain, AI, other markets, you know, like, and we're really happy to support founders, you know, like, who are really, doesn't matter where they are, you know, like, the important is that they want to build open source, you know, like, healthy for humanity technologies, you know, like, and they're, well, that run by open market, you know. And yeah, so really excited, you know, like, what's happening. I think that we are like in a new, like, are in a really good place, you know, like, to drop your, like, if you're a student, drop university, you know, like, if you are like a employee, you know, like, you can drop your, like, work and start building, you know, like, new ideas that will help us to build this cybernetic economy together.
Guys, great place to end. Constantine, appreciate your time, man. Congrats on everything, and excited to see what you do.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you.
Always a pleasure talking to you, Constantine.
Hey everyone, Jason here. Thank you so much for watching today's episode. Wanted to take a quick second to thank today's title sponsor, Arbitrum. We know you are tired of on-chain experiences that have unaffordable fees and frustrating transaction speeds, and that's why we partnered with Arbitrum. You can experience frictionless trades, lightning speed, and lag-free transactions, all for pennies per transaction. Explore Arbitrum's expanding ecosystem at portal.arbitrum.io. That's portal.arbitrum.io. See you for the next episode.